You are listening to a Banzai Retro Club podcast. Language and topics may not always be appropriate for younger listeners. Press 1 for a groovy topic from the 1970s. Press 2 for an awesome topic from the 1980s. Or press 3 for a slamming topic from the 1990s. Please choose now. Too late. We have made your selection for you. Let's start the show.
I was going to ask if you do like voiceovers and things like that.
No, I used to do theater and stuff and I used to sing, but I don't do voiceovers.
Okay.
My friends who do, if you're looking for people.
But yeah, I've spoken to like people that have done that were like the part of cartoons like from back in the 80s. Neil Ross or Kenny what's his last name? First name. Crap. Well, I'll be in trouble for that one.
What, like SpongeBob?
No. I'm thinking of the guy that did Lion-O from ThunderCats.
Ah, okay. I'm not sure if I know him, but it must be cool to talk to him and get the. I'd like to hear the voices.
Yeah, it's really fun because then you can get them to remember. You know, they're remembering how to do the voices from back in these things that they haven't done in years, and then all of a sudden you can have a conversation with. You know, Lion-O from ThunderCats, or all of a sudden Dr. Mindbender from G.I. Joe, and you're like, well, this is so awesome. I'm talking to a cartoon.
Yeah, sounds like a neat experience.
Yep.
Okay, well, I guess I can do like 45 minutes. How about that?
Okay.
Until quarter after five?
Yeah, definitely.
Ish. Okay.
Ish. I gotcha.
I think so. You know, you never know who's going to come home and be looking for me, but.
Okay. All right, so let me, is it Suzanne or Susan?
Suzanne,
and it's Mattaboni?
Mattaboni.
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 Mattaboni. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'll just quickly do an introduction here, and we'll just freewheel a conversation then.
Okay. All right. Let's see how it goes.
Yeah. Well, you said you were good with improv, so I'm testing you here.
Yeah, usually. Yeah. It's been a while, but we'll do it.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, the podcast is all about, you know, it's like having a regular dinner conversation about things retro. So mm-hmm. I'm okay with, you know, if there's a tangent that goes, hey, I had this experience just recently with whatever it is. And, you know, if that's where the conversation goes, that's where it goes.
Okay.
All right. Let me just verify I am recording. I am. Good. Perfect.
This is 70-something podcast.
Evel Knievel sold separately or with the Evel Knievel stunt cycle from Ideal.
Use the force, Luke. Let go.
HR, pop and step. Push your belly when things get rough. HR, pop and step. Can't do a little because you can't do enough.
This is Banzai Retro Club, and I am Dave. Online, I've got special guest, Suzanne Mattaboni.
Hi.
How are you doing, Suzanne?
Doing good. It's great to be here.
So, according to your website, you're a novelist, essayist. I can't even say that right. Wow. Excuse me. Why would anybody listen to me? I can't even speak. And,
close enough.
Yeah. And orchestrator of short fiction, Pushcart Prize nominated writer. I know one of your novels has to do specifically in the 80s.
Yes.
So you've had strong influences in that kind of pop culture type of thing. And I know that we were interacting on Twitter where we were really getting jazzed about the Bugaloos. And then you brought up Jack Wild, and that's another great conversation. So, without me being indiscreet and asking your actual age, but I mean, like, Were you a child of the 70s?
Yeah, definitely. Grew up in the 70s, watched the cartoons, had the big Saturday mornings. It was a lot of fun. A lot of good memories.
Okay. So in growing up in the 70s, then much like me, then we were heavily influenced by H.R. Puff and stuff, Sigmund and the Sea Monsters, Bugaloos, all those kind of good things. So you were watching all that stuff then.
Yeah, all the Sid and Marty Croft. It was magic.
It was definitely magic. So then, first off, before I go too far off your book, though, tell me about your book.
Well, it's set in the 1980s. It's called Excuse Me, Waitress, Is That New Jersey? And it's being shopped around to publishers right now. But it's kind of set more a new wave type of background where there's kind of a love triangle going on with a young girl who just graduated from college and wants to be this multimedia, you know, artistic sensation. And she does mosaics and paints, et cetera, and is big into this whole creativity. Including music and poetry, et cetera, kind of bohemian. And so she wants to get out into the world and, you know, kickstart her life and be one of the women that can have it all, because that's what they used to tell us in the 80s. You know, you can have it all. You can go to college. You can have, you know, everything. You can have whatever career you want. You know, they didn't tell people that generations before. So, so this is what happens when you go out and try to get it all, you know, love and a great career and education and friends and trying to balance everything. You know, there's a lot of craziness that happens as she tries to, you know, make money for tuition to go to the dream art program she wants to go to overseas in London and that kind of thing. So,
I would assume that there are so many great things going on or influences that led into this novel, you know, things like Baby Boom and Dynasty, you know, very powerful women. And I would assume that that kind of had an influence as far as what this woman wanted to become.
Yeah. You almost felt obligated. Like if you weren't out there making things happen, you know, you had dropped this great ball that was being handed to us, you know, and to the women of that time period. So, you know, there was a drive, I think, that we were allowed to pursue that maybe not too many other generations had the opportunity to pursue, unless you really wanted to buck all the rules.
Right.
So, but then you had to learn to, the world had to make room for those women, and their boyfriends had to make room for them, and that was caused a little bit of conflict. So, you know, it's that kind of story. It's a lot of fun. There's a lot of new wave music references and such, and Pretenders concerts and various things like that. So,
it's probably got some influences of John Hughes, I assume, also.
Yeah, kind of. In fact, I use that in comparing it. It's kind of like the Bridget Jones books and maybe cross it with a John Hughes movie.
Okay. Okay.
And there you go.
Yeah. And then, with the music choices that you were just mentioning, I was just thinking like a lot of what was going on in Pretty in Pink, maybe not so much like Breakfast Club, but yeah.
Well, the thing is, if you look back on the John Hughes movies, they were kind of more like for the masses, I think, than, you know, and things were kind of prettied up. I remember when we were young, we were kind of upset that they took the song Pretty in Pink and they remixed it and they made it sound kind of like poppy as opposed to when it actually came out on the radio by the Psychedelic Furs. So it was a little more, the movies are a little more kind of fun romance. I think what I'm going for is a little bit more, maybe a little bit more edgy, a little bit more what they might call like goth these days.
Okay.
But, you know, if there's even a little conflict there, it's like, well, you know, you can only take that so far or else you'll never get a job in your life. You can't, you know, dye your hair, you know, spike up your hair, you know, in a purple mohawk and then expect to, you know, get out there in the workplace. You've got to decide what you're going to pursue and what you're not, you know, what you're going to commit to and what you're not, and realize where you have to make your sacrifices. So.
Okay, so then as you were describing that, I was thinking probably it's probably more Valley Girl or Tough Turf than
maybe a little more Valley Girl. Valley Girl was fun. That was a good movie.
That was a great movie. I get a little bit of static for liking that one from my co-host in the past. It's a guilty pleasure.
It's a great soundtrack.
It is. And Nick Cage was just fun in that.
Yeah. I was rooting for him in that film.
And then the language. I just loved it. You know, like, for sure. Like, totally.
Yeah. Well, I'm from the East Coast, so I didn't know.
Yeah, you weren't doing any of that. In fact, everybody I ever spoke to that was even in the California area said that was just such a minor group of people. You really didn't run into a lot of people that actually talk like that, but for some reason it became this, you know, global phenomenon to be a Valley Girl. But, you know, it was
a trendy thing.
Yeah, it was a trendy thing. That's really what it was. No one was really kind of, except for a very small group of people that hung out, like, maybe in one or two malls, maybe. And then suddenly it became a thing.
But if you remember, I think Moon Unit Zappa did a song that was on the radio.
Oh my God, that song was horrible.
Where she did the Valley Girl. I think that kind of popularized it as if it was this bigger trend than it actually, you know, was in real life.
Yeah, we can't think of that song because that's a wormhole. Once you get that in your brain, you can't get it out of there.
Yeah. And it is kind of terrible.
Yeah. All right, so when we first started, like, chatting via Twitter, and, you know, for some reason, I think I tweeted out something about the Bugaloos first, and then you kind of, like, reacted to it.
I remember.
What was I tweeting out? I don't even remember anymore. It was so long ago.
I'm not sure exactly how it started, but you posted one of the songs.
Okay.
That the little bug sings, that the little girl once.
Joy.
It was Joy, I remember. Yeah.
And so, that was a kind of trippy song too.
It was very like hippy dippy 70s groovy, you know, the whole thing. And they had these cute British accents, which I think they just ran with the whole Puff and Stuff, you know, milieu with that. Or.
So, I mean, do you remember much about the that show other than kind of what, you know, we've been talking about online?
I remember I was really young. I have a vague memory that was actually my first Halloween costume was Joy with
the
antenna.
Very nice.
So don't laugh, but I think I do remember that I did, you know, kind of. You know, put on a little costume and pretend to be flying around the room. So
was there a picture anywhere? Fun. Did your mom, your dad, or anybody get a picture of that?
Not a picture of that. You know, I have so many good pictures of Halloween costumes, but not that one. I think I was too young at that point. You know, we were too little.
I gotcha.
my parents were having enough trouble just keeping us from, you know, killing ourselves somehow. So.
Well, that was the 70s. It was kind of like, you know, well, yeah, go ahead. Go down the street by yourself. And you're like, nowadays, there's no way you'd even think about doing that.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I have very overprotective parents, so my parents were hovering years before it was trendy. So.
Oh, I gotcha. Yeah. Well, I mean, unfortunately, when we hit the 80s and everybody started putting those wackos were putting stuff in the apples and, you know, poisoning candy and
that.
Yeah, I don't get that. I don't understand what motivates a person to be that way. But that's when, you know, all the parents started taking their kids candy to the hospitals to get x-rayed.
Well, like x-rayed the candy of apples. That's terrible.
Yeah, so it's like you know, back in the 70s and early 80s, we had it kind of good where
we were wild. We would go at any time of day or night that we could go and
the rule was as long as you got home before it got dark, you'd be all right, you know? And
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and now it's you can't do that. You just cannot.
We can wear costumes to school. Like can you wear costumes to school anymore? I think they stopped that after a while.
Yeah. It's like you can't wear masks and anything that has like a toy weapon of some sort. You're not allowed to do that.
Yeah, that's really bad. No, I think my kids went up. My daughter wasn't allowed to go as like Blossom from the Powerpuff Girls because I was told it glorified violence. So
Blossom from the, is not allowed.
Blossom was not allowed, and this was a while ago too. But wow. Blossom was not allowed. I was like, come on, would you give me a break? It's a pink dress and a bow.
Right. It's a Powerpuff Girl. Jeez.
No superheroes anymore.
Wow. Okay.
Which is kind of sad because I see your image here, but you know, where you're Batman, so that's kind of cool.
Oh, Batman 89 was a bomb for me.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I was going to ask you if you remembered any other characters from the Bugaloos and if you had like a favorite other than maybe Joy.
Well, I kind of cheated and looked back and watched a couple of them just to remind myself, but I quite remembered like the kind of the feeling of jeopardy when they were in trouble, you know, it was always, you know, there are these poor defenseless bugs and they're always being hunted by some, you know, nasty cartoonish type character. So I remembered that their names were all like Joy, Faith, Harmony, etc. I only remembered kind of half of the names correctly. Once I went back to look at them, but you know, it was that same kind of sparkly half puppets, half stage, half like Bob Mackie stage set practically going on in the background. So, you know, same kind of thing as Puff and Stuff and Lidsville and Sigmund. Or that one was a little more real world, but in any case,
it was fun. Yeah, I was just curious that, you know, if there was like I had a crush on Carolyn Ellis who played Joy. I didn't know if you had, you know, recollections of back in your youth where you had like a thing for maybe IQ, Harmony, or Courage.
No, well, I think, which was the dark haired guy who wore the, I think he had the red outfit. That was Harmony, but I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure that's Harmony.
Yeah, I think I kind of would have voted for him.
Okay.
But more, I wanted to be Joy, and I just wanted to, you know, put on the wings and fly around with them.
Of course, yeah. I can see who wouldn't want to go flying around and be free.
Yeah, so, you know, you watch the show, you drag the kid, the kitchen chair into the living room, and you kind of put it down, and, like, you're flying with them. It's just, so I was very creative. I had to kind of join in and perform the whole thing.
Do you remember having any of the like lunch boxes or any of the I think they even had an album that they released.
Oh, no, see, I didn't have their album. I absolutely had the Puff and Stuff lunchbox, and I had Jack Wild's album.
I just read about that. I didn't even realize he put an album out.
He had like three of them.
Wow, okay.
I'm sorry, I can't help giggling at these memories. The thing is, he was also in Oliver.
Yes.
He was also the Artful Dodger in Oliver.
Yeah, and so as soon as you brought up Jack Wild, that's who I thought, that's immediately what I thought it was, the Artful Dodger, because I love that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He was wonderful in that.
He was fantastic, but then, you know, for the listener's sake, you also know him as Jimmy from HR Puff and Stuff.
Right. But I mean, it's the same kid and it's the same time. He was really very talented.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, at what, 7 or 8 years old, whoever, well, actually, I heard he was actually older than he looked on the show. So maybe he was more like 14. But in any case, he was doing these albums where, you know, he'd sing about different girls and stuff. And so I you know, like memorized them and decided I was, you know, Melanie or whoever else it was he was singing about, et cetera. So. So we'd act that out on the playground too.
Yeah. I'm not fluent at all with like his stuff outside of the movie and the TV show. But I don't think he was in, was he in that much more after, Puff and Stuff and, Oliver?
Let's see. I remember a guest spot on Sigmund and Sea Monsters.
Okay.
When he was older.
Okay.
Then, you know, after that, sadly, I think he got caught up in, you know, a life of drugs and such.
I was reading he had an alcohol problem. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was the 70s, so.
Right.
Those kind of things were prominent. So.
Well, he was in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, too.
He was in Robin Hood. I remember seeing him in Robin Hood.
Yeah. But I seem to think that that's like the last thing I remember seeing him in.
Yeah, there was a big gap since then. I don't know what he was doing after that, you know, after he was once he wasn't a teen idol anymore. That's right. Got to be a little rough coming down from that high, you know?
Right. Yeah. I would assume so. I would think that after you've kind of, you know, too much time has passed and you kind of typecast in a certain role, then that door probably shuts pretty quick. So you kind of have to go along with it unless you're, you know, like a mega talent like Denzel Washington or Tom Hanks.
You know, yeah, and then, they didn't have to start from like 7 years old, you know, and be like trying to weasel their way back into films by, you know, at 12 or something. It's got to be a little rough.
Yeah, that'd be a tough gig. I couldn't imagine, you know, your whole life kind of being dependent on, you know, being in front of everybody and, you know, hoping to get accepted and say, yeah, you're right for that part. And you get so many rejections, you know, all the time. So that, I can imagine that life. And my hat's off to those, you know, that choose it and are successful with it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got to be a little rough.
Yep.
You did that for a while. Did musical theater and stuff. Well, regional stuff. It was fun.
Okay. So you had the album. You had it memorized.
Absolutely. Yes.
That's great memory.
Yeah. Definitely.
What was your favorite song?
Well, one of my favorites. What was my favorite song? Oliver?
Either that or the album. Was it the Oliver album, or are you talking about his independent album?
I remember one song from the albums. It was called Melanie Jones.
Melanie Jones. Okay.
Yeah. Like, I haven't looked that one up, so I don't know if it's out there floating around on the internet somewhere. But that was the song that I liked. He sang to a girl named Melanie Jones.
Okay.
So, you know, like I said, I decided that I was, you know, I was going to, you know, play Melanie out there. And other than that, you know, I did have the Oliver soundtrack memorized and would go through the musical numbers. And I think, see, when I was 12 and I was at day camp, then I played the Artful Dodger in the camp version of Oliver. So that was fun, too.
Awesome.
See, I wasn't kidding. Yeah. You're asked the right girl about this stuff.
The song I remember, Consider Yourself. Yeah, I don't know if that was the name of it. Was that the name of it? Consider Yourself?
Yeah, that's the name of it. Okay. Yeah, but that's it. It's a great song.
Yeah, the one when Oliver first gets to London and runs into the Artful Dodger and he's talking about, hey, you come with me and I'll show you the ropes and I'll introduce you to this nice guy, Fagin, who will take care of you. Yeah, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it turns into a dance number that, like, involves the entire city of London.
Yes.
Where they're, you know, throwing fish over each other's heads, and they're doing pirouettes, and they're on the carousel, and the flags are flying, and it's just wonderful.
Yeah.
And mine's Jack Dawkins, better known among me more intimate friends as the Artful Dodger.
Pleased to meet you, Mr. Dodger. Sure the old gentleman won't mind.
Mind? Consider yourself at home. Consider yourself one of the family. I've taken to you so strong. It's clear we're going to get along. Consider yourself well in. Consider yourself part of the furniture. There isn't a lot to spare. Who cares whatever we got we share. If it's your chance to be, we should see some harder days. Empty lot of days, white grouse. Always your chance we'll meet somebody to foot the bill. Then the drinks are on the house. Consider yourself our mate. We don't want to have no fuss. For after some consideration, we can stay. Consider yourself one of us.
What I always love about, like, musicals like that is just, like, once they, you know, they have this big ending production of a song like that where you're, like, everybody's joined in, the whole town is dancing, and then all of a sudden the song's over. Everybody just goes back to business.
And they all settle back, right?
Right back to business.
They settle back into, like, their, you know, their wash buckets and everything. And
it, in modern day times, if that just happened, like, randomly, where we just broke into song like that, there'd be people giving high fives to each other, and, you know.
I wish that would happen. I wish that would happen. That's what I think life should be like. That's why I went into musical theater. That's what I think life should be like.
Now, I could see a flash mob. I don't know, but I'd have a problem if they're relying on me to, like, carry a song. No, I can't do that, no.
None, I teach it. I coach it through it. It's okay. It'll be good.
So then what? Do you want to sing for me?
No.
No, I didn't think so. Well, I got you off, I caught you off guard on that one.
Well, I guess. I don't what, sing from Oliver? I don't know. I don't know if I could still sing The Artful Dodger. My voice has changed since I was 12, but.
Yeah, unfortunately, time takes its toll, I guess.
Yeah. I'd have to do the English accent.
do you do that well? Do you the English accent?
I used to. I spent a little bit of time. I lived in London for a little while in college. And at the time, I could do it really well.
In college. So what years were you in London?
1985.
Okay. So for, did you start in 85 and then like till 89-ish?
No, it was just a semester.
Oh, okay.
Just a semester, which is kind of reflected in the book. Yeah, it was a semester overseas type of thing.
So then where'd you grow up?
I grew up on Long Island.
Okay.
And I went to college in Pennsylvania, in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And, you know, I had to do something exciting with my life. It wasn't exciting enough to just stay in the United States, so.
So then, in mid-80s then, you're on the East Coast. How does London compare to the East Coast in the U.S. in 1985?
Well, I'll tell you. I was from New York. I spent some time in the Philadelphia suburbs also. It was a great place to be. There was a lot going on. It was, we'd go out to clubs in New York City and see, you know, bands like the Ramones at the Ritz and, you know, go dancing at the Palladium and such. And, you know, it was really a great time to be in the city. And that was more like I was there. I worked in Manhattan in like 1986, 87 into about 88. I don't know. New York was a little bit more rough and tumble as far as, especially in the 80s, you know, it was kind of a mess where like you would go out and have all these adventures and you're always kind of a little bit afraid that maybe you wouldn't make it home because it was freaking dangerous.
Sure.
So like if you go to London in that same time period, though, it's a little different because, all right, it's dangerous in New York. There's crime and stuff. It's a big city and it was kind of a rough city at the time. But as far as the economy over here, people were kind of faking it as far as being punks. You know, it's like you dress a certain way and you listen to a bunch of music. But really, you know, eventually you're going to grow out of it and you're going to get a good job and life is going to be nice. I kind of felt like when I went over to England that people were it was like a form of protest if you were a punk. And they were protesting the fact that there weren't jobs. They didn't have a lot of opportunity to get into college. It was just so much more difficult for young people over there at the time to see a really nice future for themselves. Now, you know, things changed. Maybe they got over and everybody grows up eventually. But I kind of felt like that was the difference. Like maybe it, you know, physically it was a little more rough and tumble in New York and or maybe Philadelphia. But in London, I felt like the people are more hopeful in the United States. They're out to have a good time, you know?
Right.
Whereas people were kind of more looking to protest by it, you know, like I felt like that was more the sensibility of when they like you like mohawk your hair and color it red, white, and blue and, you know, draw like spider makeup on your face. It was kind of like, look what you're doing to me, world.
Right.
I have no future. Where, you know, people in the United States saw that and said, oh, that's so cool. I'm going to do it. You know, meanwhile, they've got, you know, three cars in the driveway. So
right.
it was a little disconcerting to realize where that all came from and that we were like jumping on the bandwagon of something that was actually people saying this is rotten, this is a rotten life. So that was kind of my take on it. All my deep insights. There you go.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. I was like, so in London is more of like a, I wouldn't say a lifestyle choice. It was kind of like a, as you put it, like a protest against the system of, you know, successful people versus, you know, us in the U.S. just looking at it and going, oh, I'm going to do that just because it's cool.
People were jumping in to say, it's cool, it's great, I love the music, you know, I love the clothes.
Right.
It became a much more slick kind of MTV type of aesthetic.
Right.
Especially when people, you know, people like Duran Duran got it. It was, you know, they were a far cry from where that kind of music started out, like with, you know, with the Sex Pistols and, you know, or Generation X or something like that, where they were just kind of destroying themselves. They wouldn't be, you know, they weren't going to be caught dead in like a purple shantung suit on a yacht in a video. So things kind of morphed. But when I was in college there for the one semester, everybody was protesting everything, which is maybe more like it is here now, you know, where people are just, well, I'm in college. That's what I'm supposed to do, is just protest everything. So,
yeah, just if something is not politically correct, then let's debate it or argue it or spend a lot of energy hating it.
Yeah. Socialize it or, you know, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, such is youth, I guess. But, you know, that wasn't like when I was in college, we weren't worried about protesting too much. We wanted to go out to a frat party and dance and have a good time.
Yeah, that was the 80s then.
Yeah. It was fun. And it's not like I was, you know, a slacker. You know, I took school seriously, but I wanted to have a good time. You know, I want to go out and have fun and dance and meet people and do cool things. So.
Well, I'd heard that girls just want to have fun. Gee, where did I hear that?
Very well-placed reference.
Well, for those that don't get that, I think they're listening to the wrong podcast.
Yeah, maybe. Study up. Girls just want to have fun. Listen.
Oh, have you ever seen the movie?
I guess not.
Yeah,
there's a Girls Want to Have Fun movie?
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen that one.
Helen Hunt's in it.
Okay.
The girl from Sex and the City.
Sarah Jessica Parker.
Sarah Jessica Parker. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, she did a lot of movies in the 80s.
Yeah, and so it was something about them having a she wanted to be like a regular on a dance television program. And that was kind of her aspirations. And Helen Hunt was kind of the bad girl that was helping her become this, you know, dance person. And so it's good, cheesy 80s fun, but it's also called Girls Just Want to Have Fun. And I thought about it because the other night, I was over at a friend's house and she was watching that. And it was just kind of like, wow, that's just so random, you know, of an 80s movie that I haven't seen in like forever. But it was great that it was on and, you know, she was showing it, you know, to her friends. So.
Cool. Yeah, sorry I missed that one.
I don't know if it's one of those things where I'm like, you've got to go back and you must watch this movie, you know, like it's an essential movie. I would say that, you know, if you hadn't watched like Oliver, I would give that like that's an essential movie versus Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Yeah.
They're really not in league with each other.
That's true. But just to watch the little time capsule of like authentic hairstyles and the little skirts and the boots and the things that people used to wear at the time.
Is, right.
You know, sometimes even if it's not the greatest movie, you have to just appreciate the authentic aesthetic.
Right.
Because you know how it is when the film companies go ahead and they try to do a period piece, it's never quite right to the people who can actually, you know, remember that era. It's never quite right. It's like you just can't get that hair to do that thing anymore. Like you really have to be schooled, I think, as a hairdresser to get people's hair to do that. So
yeah, it's all in how you coif. That's the way it goes. It's got a coif, feathered, even the I forget what all the girls did. They had the it was like a not a straight iron, but one that actually
crimper irons.
There you go.
Yeah, see, I couldn't do too much of that stuff because I have a lot of really thick hair, but it's very heavy and it just does what it wants to do, and it's nice, but I couldn't really get it to do much else than just be straight. But that, you know, that was good. But most of the girls, if they did that crimping thing, that was pretty high maintenance. That was just like when you go to a really good party, you do that.
Oh, so you weren't crimping every day?
No, I don't think you could, because, all right, like the crimping iron is like maybe 2 inches across. And think about having to do that on every freaking strand of hair all the way down. That's got to take hours. So that was something I think you really had to spend some time on. What most people I noticed did was they had those big perms that they would then fluff up and spray. you know, they had kind of growing out perms.
Right, right.
That then got that all that volume. And, you know, you stick the gel up over your ears and you push it up and it like stick back. And that was kind of a cool look.
So did you do that with your hair?
I did the gel, yeah, on the sides. And like, you know, the bangs that were like kind of in pieces that would always like fall on your face.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that look.
And it was fun.
The Aquanet, did you have a lot of that going on?
I really couldn't use a lot. Like I said, you could Aquanet my hair to death. It wouldn't go anywhere. But there was so much Aquanet in use in my dorm that I developed an allergy to it.
Wow. That's a tough thing to be allergic to in the 80s.
I couldn't use it anyway. But I have a lot of allergies. And, you know, you spray too much stuff in the vicinity, that's it. My body says no, no more. So I couldn't do too much with the Aquanet. But you could get, like, the pump versions. Like, they had the Aussie Sprunch. And there was one more. What was it? Like, a Paul Mitchell made one. There were a couple that you could do that would not – the non-aerosols, they would like the pump sprays. So –
Yeah, I'm really not that versed with all that.
Yeah, I guess that's a girly thing.
Yeah, Aquanet, I knew. You know, I know jelly bracelets. You know, I remember the leg warmers. So you know, I remember that stuff. But you know, it's not like there was a lot of that other than my denim jacket that I really subscribed to. You know, the fashion trends of the 80s. Other than rolling my jeans, I did that.
Okay.
You had to roll the jeans up.
Like, yeah. Did you have like 10 billion little metal buttons that you put on the lapels of the jackets?
I had maybe about 10. So I wasn't.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. I had enough flair.
Who were on your buttons? What did your buttons say? Do you remember?
I remember having, when I, in the late 80s, I really started getting into comic books. And I wasn't like as a young boy, but as I got older, I started appreciating them. So I started this fascination with Batman. And so for some reason, I was hooked onto his arch nemesis, the Joker. So a lot of my pins were related to either Batman related or like a fantasy type thing related. Like I loved The Hobbit. I loved Dungeons and Dragons, that kind of thing. So, you know, if it had like a knight or medieval kind of look, I usually like that. So that I'm very nerdy.
Okay.
So yeah, that was the look that I was going with. And yeah, I wasn't like I said, it's not like I don't remember rocking any kind of members only jacket. I didn't have the punk hair. I always had sensible hairstyle. I think my dad was an influence to that. As a young boy, I had curls, and he was like very quick to make sure my mom had them cut off. So I had pretty straight.
Oh, no.
I had straight short hair pretty much my whole life up until maybe about 4 years ago, where I just went bald. So.
Well, you're saying that it's sensible, but like if you look back at pictures, like viewing it now, do you still think it's sensible, or do you think it's 80s?
I still think it's sensible for what I was what I was doing. Yeah, I had pretty much the same hairstyle up until I cut it all off. And the only reason I did that is as I was getting haircuts and they kept putting the mirror behind me to show me the back, you know, make sure it was straight. I kept noticing the spot in the top getting larger and larger. It was kind of like a, you know, like a little lake that just kept growing and growing and growing. And I was like, all right, well, I'm just going to take care of this one way. And that was just shave it all off.
Well, it's nice that that's kind of in, you know, because you can kind of make the decision, you know, you don't have to go with whatever, you know, nature says your hairline is going to look like, you know,
right,
you can
right.
take charge.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like every, you know, every few days I just, you know, run the razor over it and I'm done. I don't even have to go get a haircut. And to me, it's become, you know, convenient. And
yeah,
and the wife doesn't mind. So if the wife minded, then I'd have to grow it back. So
okay. Yeah, it's much easier to travel that way, I think. Like I travel in business, and I'm in like a male oriented field, so I'm always with guys, including, you know, ones that don't have hair. And I'm always lugging around a whole bunch of hair products, and they've got like this tiny little bag, and they get to go through security in 2 seconds. I get stopped. People are emptying things. You know?
Yeah, you have too much liquid on you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I get it. That would be challenging. And I'm glad I don't have that challenge.
Yeah, they always take away the expensive stuff too.
Of course they do.
They never confiscate the cheap hair products.
All right. So I know originally we were going to focus a lot on the 70s. Was there anything else going on with Sid and Marty Krofft that you gave a lot of attention to?
Let's see. Was Land of the Lost one of theirs? I think it might have been.
Land of the Lost was, yeah.
Yeah, that was like one of the more kind of scary ones.
Oh, man.
Everybody got freaked out by those police stacks.
The
police stacks,
yeah. Oh, my God. They scared, yeah. They were scary.
Yeah, I think that was a little later in the chronology of the shows, but... Yeah, that one was kind of interesting. They kind of like made up. I remember reading in TV Guide like they made up their own like little language for the Chaka character, right? Wasn't that his name? Little furry guy.
Oh yeah, I know who you're talking about. I just forgot his name.
I think it was Chaka or Chaka, something like that.
Chaka sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, he actually, they had somebody like make up a language for him so that he could have like a consistent kind of authentic speaking part, I guess. It was weird, but I think a lot of people out there are still having nightmares about that one.
Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition met the greatest earthquake ever known. High on the rapids, they struck their tiny raft and plunged them down 1,000 feet below to the land of the lost. The land of the lost. The land of the lost.
Other than that, I did try to go back and watch a few, and I decided to stop because, you know, it's not the same as you're an adult. As an adult, you're trying to, you know, you like lose the magic. And I don't want to ruin that memory by watching it as a grown up. It just, I'm going to let it just stay as it is.
It is so funny to hear you say that because I've articulated the exact same thing. Where,
really?
Where there, yeah. And what I've discovered is that sometimes it's better to leave something just kind of in the shelf in your memory and just let it sit there, and because then it's a wonderful thing. But if you go to revisit it, then suddenly it's like, oh my God, this was not as good as I thought it was, because you're putting your adult sensibilities into whatever it is that you're trying to enjoy or view. And then we just did that just recently where my co-host and I, we rewatched Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. And in my mind's eye, I remember when I was younger, I watched that movie and I remember enjoying it. But this time around, absolutely hated it. And it was just kind of like, what happened? What happened to this movie? And, you know, and then all of a sudden, there's a lot of things that are becoming like that, where I try to revisit them. And I'm like, well, yeah, I should have just left that alone because it was fine, me thinking it was a good thing.
Yeah, and it, you have to realize then they hit their target market, though.
Right.
I mean, maybe Indiana Jones had a little bit more broad a target. But, I mean, these kids' shows, I remember it being all sparkly and magical and wonderful. And, you know, it was very low production values compared to, like, what you see in movies and stuff today, obviously.
Right.
But it worked for us so wonderfully. And you have to wonder, as an adult, are you looking at things now and kind of trashing them in your mind that your child or friend or niece or whoever just thinks it's wonderful? And, it, you know, maybe I'm just going to keep my mouth shut when talking about other people's loves, you know, and media and entertainment, because, you know, everybody is entitled to that. And I wouldn't want anybody to take it away from me. I don't even want to, you know, take it away from myself by watching it in a contemporary setting.
Yeah. And you know, maybe that is it. There's, you know, because we're getting to see just the production level of, you know, what's being marketed to our kids. And the production level has just gone up so much. And because, you know, that's what, you know, the evolution of the medium. And now that we're, you know, and we're like watching this as adults with our kids, you know, be it the Avengers or be it, you know, even if it's a TV show, and there are certain, you know, TV shows that look so great, you know, and the animation is wonderful. And you go back and you look at something like Scooby-Doo and you're like, you know, it doesn't look as good. It's not flowing as well. And it's tough not to look at what's going on current and, you know, watching things from way back and, you know, in our retro minds and look at the production that was put into it. Even though at the time it was cutting edge, it just, to me, it just feels like it's not, maybe somebody could have put some more effort into it, but I knew that, you know, unfortunately, I've got to keep my mindset where I realize that was the technology they're working with and just enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah. And it worked. It was fun.
Yeah. Exactly.
It was beautiful at the time.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, if we're looking at Boogaloos, we know that, you know, what they had going on was obviously a lot of green screen type stuff when they're flying or they're hooked on harnesses of some sort. And if they were to redo that here in 2019, obviously they can make that look so much better. But I guess the question is, should they?
Yeah, well, Maybe not. And even if they did, the thing is, because the values have changed so much as far as, you know, what the level of expectation is, as far as what people are going to see on the screen, you know, if it was just bugs flying around, you know, I think kids, they might be asking when something was going to explode or,
right.
You know.
Right.
So.
It needed more substance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess so. But you know what? I loved it at the time, so I can't trash it.
No, I'm with you. It's just, yeah, just revisiting it just as sometimes is a challenge.
A little bittersweet, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I can remember the lunch boxes and just emulating the whole process, the Beatles cartoons and the Electra Woman and Dinah Girl, you know.
Oh, wow. Like, I haven't thought about those guys in a long time.
Yeah, they were good, too. That was very exciting.
Were you ever into, like, the Bionic Woman, $6 Million Man?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, we watched that.
Okay.
We watched that. That was exciting, too. I think my brother had the toys. My brother had the action figure.
Oh, so, you looked through the eye, and you would have, like, that was, like, Bionic Eye. Yeah. Yep, I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. As like the sun would come down this little tube and like make his eye blink.
I just remember making the I remember trying to make the sound, you know, as he's running, you know,
like
yeah. That was good times.
It was so much fun.
And, you know, I had the Evel Knievel stunt cycle, and I was always trying to get that to go into the, down the driveway and into the street.
Never worked quite as well as the commercials.
No, not at all. No. It's like, how come mine doesn't, like, stay, like, you know, on its two wheels longer than it should, but.
Yeah, that falls over. Yeah. Well, my brother had that one, too. Wasn't it like you pulled the little T-string and it went vroom?
No, there was like a this little wheel that you would grind up, you know, and then it would like store power of some sort, and then you would just let it go.
Okay.
Yeah. I remember that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember some of those zip strips, and they made a really cool noise.
Oh, yeah. The zip strips are awesome.
Like the ones with the teeth?
Yep.
Yeah. With like a teeth thing with, with the teeth, and you pull it. Yeah.
Yep.
That we had the Star Trek toys too, even though that show was off the air for a while. But I remember playing the Star Trek toys with my brother. Because, you know, it was just the two of us. We had to, you know, if he wanted a playmate, sometimes I was it.
Yeah.
So we played with the same Star Trek toys, where if you watch episodes of The Big Bang Theory now, they are making a big deal about those toys that I played with my brother.
Like you had
in the backyard.
Like your brother had the transporter, right?
Yes, he did.
Yep. I remember that. I remember that episode of Big Bang Theory where he like had, you know, Mitt and Box, and he was like trying to, like, his had gotten damaged, and then he like switched it at Leonard's or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And he took it out of the box and broke it and switched it.
Yep.
And then the Phantom, you know, Spock doll was chastising him in his dreams.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I was looking at it saying, we had that toy. I played with that toy.
Oh, good memories.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, it was always the Star Wars action figures. I had so many of those. And, you know, much like what you're talking about, but unfortunately, my sister wasn't where she didn't want to play with the action figures for Star Wars or my G.I. Joes. So my G.I. Joes and Star Wars figures always had to come visit her Barbies. So that was kind of a...
Did she know they were visiting the Barbies?
No, she was part of that part of that playtime. It wasn't like I had some sort of like ulterior motive with my my G.I. Joes.
Just like invade the Barbie paradise. Okay.
Interesting thought, though.
good for you. I was just wondering. Because, well, I don't know. Maybe you were the older brother or something. I had a younger brother.
No, I was younger. Yeah, yeah.
He would frequently just invade my room and, like, ruin everything. I used to set traps for him to try and prove he was in there messing things up. So
what kind of traps would you try to set for him?
I would put, like, little pieces of paper like in the record albums too, because he wasn't allowed to touch anything,
right?
But he would go in there and play my music. So I would put little pieces of paper slipped so that if he pulled out the record album, they would fall out and I would know that he'd mess with them, because I also knew that he wasn't going to be looking as to whether something was falling out, you know. He just grabbed stuff.
Right. Okay, so it's more of the yeah, not necessarily like, you know, some sort of bucket to land on his head or something. You were just trying to prove. You were looking for evidence. I gotcha.
Right. Yeah. That he went in and used my stuff. Moved it around, you know, because nobody would believe me, you know.
So then what would happen to him? Let's say a piece of paper fell out. You knew that it was him. What?
Oh, nothing ever happened.
Nothing ever happened? Okay. I didn't know if mom and dad had gotten involved. No?
No, they would just, like, well, you know how it is in the 70s. It's like, they're just like, go out and play.
Right.
We don't care. So we listen to your soundtrack for, you know, Schoolhouse Rock. Big deal. Relax, Suzanne. Such a drama queen.
Schoolhouse Rock. Love it.
Yeah, that was a good one, too. Yep.
Conjunction Junction.
Yeah. What's your function? Yep. Yeah. You can sing those, too.
Yep.
And probably recite the preamble to the Constitution, thanks to them.
Yep. I'm just a bill.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
And the figure eight one was cute. In fact, that was like Blossom Dearie singing, I learned later. So, and I think the composer went on to do like Broadway shows and stuff. So that was quality stuff they gave us.
Yeah, I loved Schoolhouse Rock. I was, you know, like Verb, that's what's happening.
Yeah, that was a hip one, right?
Yeah.
That was a hip one.
Yeah, that was. One. Yep. Wow, good stuff. Interjection. Yeah, here I am just thinking about him now. all right, so, well, I want to respect your time. So did you want to give us a, you know, how do people find you online?
Well, my website is SuzanneMattaboni.com. I think it's SuzanneMattaboni. I think I also have SuzanneGreco.com because that I have some publications under that name. So that was my, my maiden name. Yeah, there's a few blogs on there and some info about me, you know, mostly the news and stuff. And, yeah, I have fiction in various anthologies and such that, you know, are mostly, you know, party girls learning to have to grow up type of type of fiction, you know, new adult type things. So that's fun, too. And this was great, too. It's, you know, it's a lot of fun to be able to, you know, spend a couple of minutes talking, reminiscing, and throwing your ideas and memories out there.
Yeah, anytime I get a chance to geek out with somebody that, you know, enjoyed the same kind of things, and it sounds like, you know, with you know what we're talking about with H.R. Puff and stuff, the Bugaloos, Jack Wild, a lot, you know, there's a lot of interests of ours that kind of align. So I, you know, like you, you know, a lot of these things were going on in my youth and was, you know, deeply influential as to, you know, what it was that, you know, I would eventually learn to love and like. And I'm not ashamed to admit that, you know, I love the movie Oliver, and, you know, I too was singing, you know, Consider Yourself. Yeah.
It was the best.
Yeah. So yeah, anytime I get to, you know, have somebody on that also has those kind of appreciations, it's always a good time. So I appreciate you making time for me.
Oh, sure. Well, thanks for inviting me. That was great.
Okay. Just to remind everybody there, we also have a website. That's BanzaiRetroClub.com, BanzaiRetroClub.com. Go on there. You can follow us on all our Twitter, Tumblr, and Facebook and all that kind of good jazz. And with that, I'd like to remind everybody to be excellent to each other and have a good whatever, because we have no idea when you're going to listen to this. Bye.
This has been a Banzai Retro Club production.
Banzai, Daniel-san!
Hey, Banzai!
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 Banzai!